It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
And hello once again. It is Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and tech news you can use, brought to you each and every week here in the North State by Advanced Automotive of Reading, safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community. Pre-recorded this week. We are recording this show on Friday, so we're off to the coast. We're not tuned into the royal wedding because that's so far off of our radar. A lot of the planet is tuning in to the royal wedding.
Probably one of the...
It's
most,
going to be streamed.
Yeah, one of the most documented, viewed, you know, instantaneously royal events ever.
Yeah, talk about living in a fishbowl. Well, but it's somebody's got to do it. Welcome to the program. We don't offer to fix your computer. We don't have a large staff of reporters. We are the staff. And we definitely invite you to contact us at boomertechradio@gmail.com. Or Bob at KCNR1460.com, our flagship station. And a big shout-out to Advanced Automotive of Reading, our prime sponsor, who has been bringing you this show for the past 8 years. Maybe not.
Nine years.
Yeah.
Over 9 years.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I thought we were going into our 10th. We're working on our 10th year. So we're over 9 years into this now. I lose track.
Yeah, well, we went on the air in 2010.
Okay, so that was the spring of 2010, as I believe. Okay, so eight is now been. So we're going into our ninth year.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I the 10th year thing kind of, you know, that's a little scary when you can say that.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Indeed.
We're going to lead off with a story that has showed up in USA Today about, now we've been hearing about Russian hackers, and this doesn't have anything to do with your local elections, apparently. U.S. officials have warned that that home and business routers are being probed for takeover by foreign agents. And this isn't the nerd in the basement who wants to get into your stuff. This is actual infiltration, and this is being documented. And I don't want to scare anybody, but this is a state-supported effort to... financially gain, to basically subvert Internet of Things devices that are poorly protected, because that's how you mount a massive cyber attack, is you have these armies of what are called botnets, of robot or zombie nets, where literally every device in your house sends a request to a server at the same time, and you do this times 100,000. And you have just brought whole sites down to their knees because they cannot respond to all the requests.
So if you're thinking, what would they be interested in my house? They're not terribly interested in you, probably, if you're an individual in a residence. What they're interested in is being able to piggyback into your access to the network and also controlling your devices to do things like that.
Yeah. Or some of these bad actors are looking to subvert systems in people's houses to use them to harvest Bitcoin.
Yep. They may be trying to, if you're a business and they think you have access connections to other businesses or backdoors into government computers in particular, they're looking for those ways to get into those systems. And so they can backdoor things And you may not even know what's going on. That's the kind of the crummy part about this.
So the weakness in all of this is your home router, especially if it's something that you've picked up at, you know, the box store or ordered off of Amazon or whatever. And you take it out of the box, plug it in, and then forget about it. Because, oh, the lights came on, everything is hunky-dory, I can connect to the internet, I can watch my Netflix.
All is good.
Yeah.
So the,
or is it?
Well, that's the thing. So we've said this many times before. This is really just somewhat foolhardy, because, and it's very, very trusting, because a number of things can happen. Even if it's not the nefarious Russian hackers coming in to do things, your neighbor may see you have a wide-open router and take advantage of your internet connection without
that's how
you.
Used to do it. You always look for the guy up in the next apartment.
Well, it used to be that way. You could go anywhere. People could go into a neighborhood or what have you, and just hack into. We did that once in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We just hacked into their unsecured.
No, we didn't really hack. It was wide open. We just logged in.
Yeah, but I mean, we weren't staying there. We just pulled in the parking lot and made use of their Wi-Fi and left. You know, so that happens. But the. Are precautions you should take, mm-hmm. because if your banking information, for instance, is recorded, they could clean you out.
Yep.
And more people are doing stuff like that online, even if you give your credit card to make orders for things. You don't want people messing around in there.
Yeah. Once they're in your systems, they can harvest usernames and passwords. Do you do your banking online? You may think that you're safe sitting at home. When in fact you're basically your pants are down to the world. They can get into your operating system, change your configurations, can redirect your traffic through state controlled routers and servers in other countries.
They can lock you out too, mm-hmm. so that you can't go in and fix that. You'd
or
have to go
inflict you with ransomware.
Exactly, you'd have to go buy a whole new router and. Call it good.
So do you grab a stack of legal pads and completely eschew the internet? No. There are ways to do this safely. The first thing to do is make sure that your router's firmware is updated.
Right.
If you don't know how, grab the manual. It is not a complicated process. Or get online and say, update firmware, and type in the name of your the model number of your router. The instructions are right there.
Grab your nearest 12-year-old geeky kid and they will be able to do it probably without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
So what is firmware in this case, just to let people know?
Firmware is software stuff that comes on a disk or a drive, or it is a portable form of software. Firmware is built into a device. Now, firmware can be updated. We talk about flashing the BIOS a new computer or updating it.
It's still programming, but it's more into the internal workings of the device.
Correct. It is intrinsic to a piece of hardware, whereas software is something that you are running from another source. It might be something you downloaded, might be something, if you're really old school, coming off of a USB disk. For those of us who have been doing this for a long time, it was something on a floppy.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be moved from device to device and run on different devices, whereas firmware tends to be unique to that piece of mm-hmm. equipment, like Bob said.
So one of the things you're going to need in your toolkit is your router's password. Now, you can go get your admin password default as it came from the factory. If you've never looked at it, look at it and then change it to something that only you will know. And, of course, our suggestions on hack-resistant passwords are pick a phrase that means something to you and yours, make it all one string, and then substitute symbols and numbers for letters or randomly capitalize.
Yeah, a few things. Now, you say, well, I can't remember that. Well, unfortunately, we are in a day and age where these complicated passwords are difficult to remember. There's a couple different ways to handle that. You can actually write it somewhere and not let anybody know where it is. Write it down, which is not such a bad idea, because if you inadvertently get smacked by a Mack truck or run over mm-hmm. while you're bicycling, it does let somebody know how to get into your accounts. Or you can also have a password locker on your computer that is password protected. Yeah. So you have one password to rule them all.
Here's a great password tip. Don't use this one, okay? Let's suppose that you have three dogs in your house and they're all very happy. So your password would be three happy dogs. Now, you can make it the word three or the number three, because we want to have numbers, letters, and symbols in your configuration
file. The O in dogs could be a zero. The S in dogs could be a dollar sign or a Z, like maybe even a capital Z.
The ampersand can be an A.
Right.
Think, dollar signs for S's. These are common substitutions. Also, a 3 can be an E backwards. These are all tricks that are used by people who want to make unique usernames.
Right. And if you say, well, the thieves know these tricks, still they don't know what order. It's a lot harder to go through all the iterations that your password might have. And they'll move on to something easier, like the person that left the default password 123456789 in place.
Or admin.
Yeah, admin or password or any of those that are pretty straightforward. And it's shocking. Statistically, we consistently read about the number of people that do not change from these very easily figured out passwords. The hackers, the very first one they try is password.
Mm-hmm.
Open sesame, 123456789.
My little secret.
Yeah, my little secret and things like that that are just so common. Come up with something weird and then write it down if you have to.
Don't use your pet's name if you talk about your pet.
Like on social media,
for instance. Media.
Yep.
Don't use your mother's maiden name because even though
that's
the
public
bank,
record.
Yeah, the bank uses that. That's a public record thing.
Yep.
Just be one step ahead of the bad guys. Another thing you need to do, turn off what's called remote administration. Now, that's the ability to use your computer from another location. This makes it easy for tech support to get into your computer and all that. Well, unless you are actually doing something like that, turn it off.
Right.
Go into the router's admin software and turn off, when you're on your administrator page, turn off remote administration, usually in the settings under remote, and turn off older internet management protocols like Telnet, TFTP, SNMP, and SMI. These are all older protocols that were used to remotely access computers.
Yeah, I was going to say, does anybody use those anymore?
No, but they are.
SMTP, that was a big one.
Yeah. So these are things that get left on by default, and they are openings into, you want to make your internet, you could spend thousands of dollars on locks and cameras and all this stuff and leave your router wide open.
Yeah. What is interesting is that these devices should show up where you opt into things, not opt out of things. And usually they show up and they're already, you have all of these things that are turned on automatically. You have to go and turn them off, such as remote access and things like that. Mm-hmm. Come on.
DNS settings. DNS is domain name service. And your router, when it gets an address put in, goes and looks. Or your internet service provider goes and converts when you type in, say, kcnr1460.com, it goes to a domain name server, plugs that in, and gets back a string of numbers like 192.168.0.1, which, by the way, is your router's default address for most people.
Huh.
But it's a string of four groups or six groups of numbers that uniquely identify your connection to the internet. There's a free service that offered by IBM Security, Packet Clearinghouse, and the Global Cyber Alliance. It's called the Quad9 domain name system, designed to protect internet users. It's basically a database of known malware providers who, if you are given a web address or redirected to something, it checks and says, uh-oh, this is a red flag internet address, and it pops up a warning, or it will simply block you. This is great for the kids who see, maybe get handed an internet address. Oh, go to this internet. This is a common thing.
Or if you download malware of somebody's flash drive or something like that inadvertently, open that email that you're not supposed to.
Of course, IBM has a big interest in protecting computers from this sort of thing, and they analyze over 40 billion web pages and images for bad stuff. And again, there's people who will say, well, this is why I will not own a computer. Well, okay, that's your call.
Right. There's always a trade-off. No such thing as a free lunch.
For those of us who do want to work with this stuff, you can do so. You can walk down the street and do so safely if you take a little safeguarding.
Yep. Take a little time. It's worth your while.
Another tip, turn on a guest network. You know, several friends of ours have guest networks, and this is so that if somebody's visiting, they can log on, they can check their email and stuff like that, but they can't get into the other computers in your house.
Right. They can't get in and reset your router. They can't mess around with things.
Most new routers have a guest network option, or you can simply set up a second router that is strictly for guests. Make sure it is secured also, but that's the one that you steer all your guests to if you have people frequently visiting.
Right. And don't be allergic to have a fairly complicated password for these things, because most devices now, let's say your friends visit, you know, infrequently, or maybe they visit frequently, but once they've logged into that network, most of the mobile devices we have will remember that network.
Right.
And you'll automatically be connected to that once it recognizes it again.
Right. We have friends who we go visit, and our pads and such remember that network and say, oh, hi, it's you again. You
know? Yeah, exactly. So if you have a long or weird password, you or the router has a weird password, you usually only have to enter it once. Mm-hmm. Make note of it, though, someplace, because inevitably something happens and the device is tank, or you get an update or a software update or something, and all that gets erased. So you'll want to be able to readily have your router password available for yourself and others that might be using it.
There you go. Meanwhile, for the first time, the global share in smart speaker technology owned by Amazon, which pretty much defined smart speakers, has dropped below the 50% mark. Now, they still sell more than anybody else, but more companies have come into the fray. They're no longer the only game in town. Apple and, of course, Google Home, which came in late in the game, but in my opinion is a better smart speaker. Then a bunch of people went out and bought Apple's HomePod, which is not an impressive home speaker, in my opinion. It's got marvelous sound, but Siri does not play well as a search engine.
Yeah.
For some people swear by Siri, but as a in-home smart assistant, Siri is a whole lot dumber than, say, the Amazon lady or the Google lady. And they don't have to be all ladies. New software is coming out where you can get a male voice. In some countries, that is a preferred option.
Yes.
To have a male voice. Why do we use female voices on computers? Because the female voice cuts through noise far better and is more comprehensible because it's in a higher octave. If you're in a noisy environment, what's most of the noise? Rumbles and thumps and hums and things like that. In the low frequency ranges,
get lost in that.
Male voices can get lost in that, whereas a female voice, anybody who's had a mother, which is pretty much all of us, knows that mom's voice can cut right through anything.
Thomas James! Especially if the middle name's included.
Yeah.
Right? I'm reminded of that Star Trek episode where the guy named
Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
Yes, exactly.
When it's a rising note on the last word, you know you're in trouble.
Harcourt? Oh, yeah.
Amazon shipped 4 million smart speakers during the first quarter of 2018. But again, the global market share is starting to drop down compared to last year, according to an analytic company, Strategy Analytics. Globally, 9.2 million smart speakers were shipped. Google, Amazon, Apple, and Xiaomi trail behind Amazon, but Google Home is really starting to get some legs under it. And then these Chinese makes, of course, in the second largest economy in the world, China, smart speakers are becoming a thing. Now, I would be a little suspicious of a smart speaker being sold in a country that is noted for keeping tabs on its citizens.
Yeah. There you might have a real reason to be paranoid about the possibility that it's listening all the time, quite literally.
Yeah. George Orwell's 1984, famously, the television was also a monitoring device. And this was written back, I forget when 1984 was written, the original George Orwell. I think it was in the 30s when television was just coming out. But it might have been after World War II. Brenda's looking that up right now. When was 1984 written, the original? But we talk about an Orwellian society. There's people quite convinced that the NSA is already doing Big Brother on all of us. They have been caught doing such things.
Published in 1949.
Okay, so post World War II, Russia was really, this was a very Cold War thing.
Yes.
And Orwell was predicting that a world order would take over. And that's what a lot of people are very fearful of, is the government spying on everybody and controlling everybody. I'm thinking that it could happen, but... informed people are pretty resistant. Do we have to be vigilant? Oh, hell yeah.
Yep. There are societies that have lived with that, and they seem to
find a way
around that. Yes, just like the criminals build better ways to get your things, and when you build a better criminal trap, then they up their game again as well. So not terribly different.
Next up, a recent study. Now, this is interesting. Back in the late 1990s, experts were worried that by 2010, half of the U.S. electrical grid would be dedicated to powering the Internet because computers of that time were not as efficient as what we have now.
Energy hogs.
People got a little bit scared. Now, a 2011 study concluded that data centers overall consume less than 2% of the country's electricity, which is still a pretty substantial number of megawatts. 2% of the country's electrical output powers data centers, but it isn't anywhere near half.
Yeah, the 2% is 48% away from half, by the way.
Now there's all these stories lately about Bitcoin mining and how... one study claimed that mining Bitcoin uses up as much energy as the entire country of Ireland. Well, if you add up the potential draw, you might have a point. But rarely are these machines working 24/7, 100%. For decades, according to, what is his name, Dutch researcher Alex de Vry, he concluded the Bitcoin network, he had the thing that he had the big estimate, but Jonathan Kumi, he's a researcher at Berkeley Lab, saying that we don't have enough information to make a blanket statement like that. Now, the estimates vary, but... This guy in the Netherlands figures that the Bitcoin network is consuming 2.55 gigawatts of electricity. Where's Doc Brown? 4.21 gigawatts! From Back to the Future, of course.
Yes.
Could potentially consume 7.67 gigawatts. Now, this is where we need the Mr. Fusion to generate the flux capacitor.
Yeah, notice that's three times, when the potential is three times what they figure is at least being done.
Now,
close to three times.
Yeah. Producing a Bitcoin is called mining. Takes a big amount of power, but various studies have been less than successful in getting the entire accurate number. But I think just as we were supposed to be in an ice age right now, and we were supposed to run out of oil by now, this particular catastrophic prediction probably is a little bit overblown. It's Boomer Tech Radio. Be back with my son, Alan, and his take on the tech news of the week. Boom, goodies, gadgets, and gizmos on Boomer Tech Radio continue after this.
ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneville. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive. For some, yard work isn't a chore. It's a passion. If you're someone who loves being outside and takes pride in your lawn, then you need the Honda HRX, one of the most technologically advanced walk-behind mowers on the planet. The HRX features the VersaMow system, a unique 4-in-1 system that lets you bag, mulch, discharge, or shred leaves with no attachments. Then there's Honda's exclusive MicroCut twin-blade cutting system, which gives you finer clippings for more bagging capacity, or when mulching, finer clippings that actually help feed your lawn. Plus, the HRX's handle and controls are ergonomically designed to be comfortable on your hands. A limited lifetime warranty on the Nexsight deck and an impressive 5-year limited warranty on the mower make the HRX one of the best values anywhere. To learn more, just visit Honda.com. Better yet, come see the Honda HRX at Lee's Honda, 2230 Larkspur Lane in Reading. Serving the North State from the same location since 1967, online at Lee'sHonda.com.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and, of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear, but directly from the lab. That means you get it faster and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab, faster for less.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later. And often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneville. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, It's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
Welcome back to Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi here with me on the Skype line now. Alan Belongi, and quite a week in tech. We've had some things happening, but also some news headlines that struck me as kind of interesting and maybe a bit of confusion. Some people are confusing what exactly is an autonomous vehicle and when is a self-driving vehicle not necessarily an autonomous vehicle.
Right, because just because a car has an autopilot feature doesn't mean it's going to drive you from A to B all by itself. There's a whole bunch of different layers of, you know, self-driving or help driving or however you want to call it, all the way between, you know, the whole lane assist thing where the car just keeps you in your lane, to autopilot mode where it'll do its best to, like, you know, switch lanes for you to get around things, try to keep the same pace. But the autopilot mode's not intended for you to just not pay attention. It's to let you be a little lazy, but you still need to watch the road and keep your hands on the wheel.
Right. There's the old story about the guy who had a cruise control in his RV and wrecked it when he went back to make a sandwich because he didn't quite understand. Didn't quite understand what cruise control meant.
That doesn't even steer for you.
Right, right. Well, he somehow took it literally. Supposedly he was a foreigner of some sort. That's an old joke. But are we not getting there? People are assuming, just like people depended absolutely blindly on GPS and would turn whenever the little lady in the box said, "Turn here," with absolutely no situational awareness at all. And these things are not a GPS and autopilot on your Tesla. They are not meant to replace situational awareness.
No. And that's actually one of the problems I hear about the rear-view cameras is that they aren't actually preventing any, like, injuries because however safe it is to be able to easily see what's behind you, it's making people more complacent and pay less attention because they have a camera behind and on the back of their car. Yeah. So it's not actually preventing anything because whatever, you know, extra vision you get, you're not watching anyway.
It's literally tunnel vision. If it's not in the frame, it doesn't exist, just like in movie making. So, yeah, if there's something that isn't quite within the camera's field of view, somebody will just ram into it because in their brain, it's not there.
Yeah. I've been driving a car recently that's had a backup camera and all that, and I don't look at it. I turn myself around and look behind me. I appreciate it beeping when it senses something because it gives me extra pause to double check, but I'm not going to rely on it and just stare at that while backing up.
Yeah, well, I drive a Jeep with the top down, so that's very
that
situationally aware.
However, it is really easy to back up to things when you got a camera right there. You know exactly how far away you are from it.
And stay in the lines, and when you turn the wheel, the little lines turn. That's kind of convenient. But here's a great thing. People have lost the art of parallel parking. I get amused every time I go down to the post office and see people completely going at it wrong. Something as basic as parallel parking a car that they covered when I was in high school, but they apparently driver's training doesn't bother with anymore. And apparently they don't even test on it.
I didn't, and that was over a decade ago. I'm not very good at it because you just don't get very much practice anymore.
Yeah.
The only places you ever find places that need parallel parking is in generally downtown areas, and that's just, you know, not common anymore.
Yeah, if you're downtown, you're taking some form of mass transit. Anyway.
So anyway, back to the Tesla. In Utah, the woman admitted to being on her phone, and she slammed into a fire truck and actually ended up with only a broken ankle. Which Elon Musk was quick to point out that, you know, for all the negative attention he's getting, a 60-mile-per-hour crash and the lady only got a broken ankle. That seems like a pretty safe car, even if she was using the autopilot feature incorrectly.
Yeah. And obviously the software engineers are going to look at this and say, okay, how can we get the software to see the large red obstruction and react to it properly?
Well, it's not, the whole thing's not designed to stop for, like, stationary objects like that. It's designed to be able to calculate some things on the fly, but it's not expected nor intended to see things like that. You're supposed to be doing that
while
on the autopilot feature.
Well,
people are misusing it and then getting upset that it doesn't work the way that it's not supposed to work.
There is a corollary to Murphy's Law that says if you develop a foolproof system, only a fool will use it.
Because that's all that we'll know how to be.
Oh, dear me. Now, your next bit here, for those who really have what you might call disposable income, the good news is that you don't have to hunt for a power outlet for your iPhone X. You can charge it up with the power of the sun. How very correct of you. Of course, leaving your phone out in the sun could be a problem. There's also a little problem with the price tag, right?
Yeah, so the Russian phone accessory maker, appropriately named Caviar, it makes very expensive over-the-top iPhone cases, has made something that they call the iPhone X Tesla, which is, you know, not related to Elon Musk's company, but it's a case that you can put on your phone that taps into the battery. You take off the whole back portion and put this on there. And it's got a solar cell on the back, which you can leave out there and charge it with the sun. And, you know, after charging it about, 8 million times, you might make up the $4,500 that it costs to buy this thing.
Well, not only that, the physics of solar cells tells me that you could have the entire back of the phone as one big solar cell, and you're not going to have enough current to fully charge that, about 3,500 milliamp hour battery. I mean, physics just doesn't add up here. It might you have to have X amount of square footage to get Y amount of current. I don't know the exact calculations, but I know that a 50-watt solar panel is a couple of square feet. So you're not getting a lot of amperage out of this thing, not getting a lot of watt-hours out of this panel.
I'm thinking it's not the effectiveness that they're selling, really. It's the novelty of it.
At $4,600, it better be pretty darn novel. So, I remember our TV at home had a voice command system. It was, Bob, walk over and change the channel.
Yeah. Hey, somebody needs to go do this.
Go manipulate the antenna. Turn the volume up. You know, we had voice command back then. Understand that every once in a while, when you have lots of things connected to the cloud, it's going to rain on you.
Right. So the company Nest, which makes a bunch of Internet of Things, which I'm not sure I like that designation, but their servers went down for a couple hours overnight, and nobody's devices worked remotely for that. So while you could still walk up to your door and lock it like some kind of caveman, they didn't work from your smartphone. And the whole idea of it, you know, shutting down for a few hours obviously didn't hurt or kill anybody, but it goes to how you can't rely on these things if they're all necessitated to be connected to some kind of server, which then, you know, if you have all of your cameras and such hooked up to the internet and the only way they ever record anything is by going to the cloud, then the burglar goes and cuts your line to the internet outside, then your cameras aren't doing you any good, are they?
Yeah, I recall an episode of Star Trek when Scotty told Captain Kirk that the transporter was a mighty finicky piece of equipment to be putting your life on. And so it is with the internet. We are so dependent on it. And I know people who listen to this program say, see, this is why I don't own a computer. This is why I don't own a smartphone, because they always break. They don't always break. They break 0.1% of the time, which is what gets all the press.
Right. I just can't be a fan of always on anything. I like internet connectivity. I like the convenience that it gives, but when it doesn't work without being connected to the internet, then it causes a lot more problems, in my opinion, than it solves.
Right. I like my Kindle to work in an offline mode, and most devices of that nature, music players, things like that, what I do with my Amazon when we're on a long trip is I will download songs and have them in the memory, and as long as I reconnect with the mothership, you know, every, I think it's about once a week or so, the songs stay viable. Now, if it's out of touch for a whole week, the songs go away.
Then it'll kill itself, yeah. But it also just brings me to wonder why we need to be able to lock our doors from, you know, halfway across the country. It's like, well, you could just, I don't know, lock it before you leave.
Or the latch, yeah.
Set the thermostat while you're there, and if it's slightly too cold before you get home, that's not really that big a deal, in my opinion. It can be cold for a couple of minutes before the heater warms you up.
Yep.
You know?
Speaking of cool, it was supposed to be the epitome of cool. People walking around the airport with their luggage following them dutifully behind like R2-D2. Unfortunately, due to what I have come to refer to as hoverboarding, no longer will the follow-you-around luggage be able to do it because of the nature of lithium ion, right?
Yeah. Radian, a smart luggage company, declared that they're shutting down operations because of the whole Samsung battery explosion fiasco, essentially, that prompted airlines to not allow people to bring on lithium ion batteries onto the plane without being like first checked. And the problem with that is all these smart luggages, which you can plug your phone into to charge, it drives around itself, it, you know, has a locator in it to make sure you don't lose it at the airports, all sorts of different things, all have to be basically dead weight when you have to take the battery out and not have it plugged in when you get on the plane. So this company, who was on track to make a ton of money and it was nothing but growing, all of a sudden, you know, started hemorrhaging sales once airlines started making it impossibly inconvenient to use their product to bring onto their planes, and now they're shutting down.
There were calls. Of course, the famous Galaxy Note 7 was banned from airlines because of some rather spectacular footage of the devices going up in flames. There have been reports of lithium-ion batteries in the latest generation of iPhones malfunctioning. The whole push, of course, is to make these batteries thinner and thinner so the devices are more svelte, which means tighter tolerances inside. And we've talked about that before, that when you start getting your tolerances just a bit too tight in a lithium-ion battery, the slightest amount of damage that can short the internal plates or even the thermal expansion, if the battery is not made entirely up to spec, this is what happens with these with the hoverboards about a year and a half ago, was that these batteries are being churned out in a cheap factory. And the rest is history, because you've got a lot of watt hours stuffed into a small package, and the slightest flaw, we had ourselves a little Mount Vesuvius in the middle of the living room.
Right. And remember, you're trying to contain, you know, a chemical reaction with acid and metal inside a tiny little slip of plastic. So it's really not surprising that when you keep making that slip of plastic smaller and smaller and smaller, it starts getting more difficult to contain them. But the airlines making a blanket ban of something that might go wrong with some phones always just felt like kind of an overreaction to me. Most lithium-ion batteries don't blow up, so the fact that they have to make everything take it off at the slight chance that something might go wrong, and even if the battery fully exploded in an airplane, it's not going to really do anything. It might burn the guy's leg, but that's pretty much the extent of it.
Well, I think the concern is with chemicals being released in that closed environment, and I'd be a lot more nervous about the battery being down in the aircraft luggage area. In fact, you are not allowed to ship lithium-ion batteries on an airliner because
air pressure, right?
Well, that, and if on a cargo airline, in fact, the U.S. Mail will not allow you to send lithium-ion batteries over a certain size, and when you get are there in the forget what the size is. I think it's 10,000 milliamp hours. You know, when these battery boosters that you can pack around with you, I think 10,000 milliamp hours is the maximum that you are allowed to have with you. Now, I've got a couple of these things. If 10,000 total is the max you can have on you, I don't know if that's per unit or if that's, you know, aggregate total of the batteries you have on you. That's something that you would have to find out from TSA, and probably the rules change every week. So the whole thing is, and here again, people say, well, I just won't have the technology because it always goes wrong. Well, that's kind of a Hollywood thing, you know, that is always going to go horribly wrong. And again, I make the point that 99% of the time, everything works as advertised, but it's the 1% that definitely gets the bad press.
Hey, right, even those worst case scenario Samsung phones, hardly none of them actually, you know, melted or anything.
Right, there's a video making the rounds on the internet right now that purports to show an iPhone X in for repairs on a repair bench exploding. And there's some interesting things about the video. First of all, it is supposedly security camera footage, but it sure looks like cell phone video because it's in the vertical format. Okay, people have taken smartphones and turned them into security cameras, but it's perfectly timed. The guy doesn't react as you would expect. He simply rolls back out of the way. Most people, when something goes bang, flash right in front of them, would have a very jumpy reaction. This guy's kind of casual about the whole thing. Next, the phone is in what appears to be a wooden box. Now, it's very grainy footage. And the working, and Apple is looking into this because there's wondering, was this maybe a hoax to jump on this bandwagon? And I can bet that the folks at Apple are looking at this footage very carefully to see if it is some kind of hoax to kind of stir up hysteria about these exploding batteries. Now, there have been documented cases of iPhone batteries swelling and pushing the case open, but this is like a powder, you know, touching off the gunpowder type explosion, which makes people a little curious because that very rarely actually happens with a lithium-ion battery. They can get very hot and set objects on fire, but to actually explode like a small bomb, that doesn't quite add up.
Yeah, I mean, the plastic would have to contain the force of the explosion, and it really wouldn't. I mean, it can't be a pressure building in it before it explodes. The plastic's not strong enough to build that kind of explosion, and then the lithium-ion battery just can't generate an explosive force like a grenade or something.
Right, and this looks, for all the world, like maybe some black powder or something similar being set off under a mocked-up phone, because the footage is very grainy. You might want to look it up for the exploding iPhone on test bench. I looked at the footage, and I found it to be something's not quite right with it.
Yeah.
Speaking of something not quite right, we know that our devices, that we leave our little digital footprints all over the place, and there are legitimate reasons to be able to track someone's movements, and then there's a lot of not so legitimate reasons. There's companies that when you give them your location data, and if why someone needs my location data to let me play a chess game, okay, something's not right with that. I'm more than likely to turn it off. But there are companies that a cell phone tracking company website, what's that story?
So Location Smart is a data aggregator, and it claims to have direct connections to all cell phone carriers to obtain locations for nearby cell towers. And it has a, like, try before you buy page. So let's just test the accuracy of it all. But it requires express consent from the user before their location data can be sent to someone. But there's a very easy workaround on their – there was a very easy workaround on their website to not make you require to respond to the text message it sends you before going to the trial of tracking this phone number. So this dude went in and just started looking up random cell phone numbers and got whatever he wanted, able to track pretty much anybody. And it was, he eventually told the website, and it's like, hey, you know, your authentication here is really, really crappy, and anybody can get in right now to any phone they want. So that's definitely one reason I would understand why you wouldn't want to carry around a smartphone, because it is a tracking device. You're going to be tracked with it if you have one. Mm-hmm. And cops can... and not supposed to without a warrant, but can get your location if they know your cell phone number very easily.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to take a court order, but...
supposed to.
Yeah, that is the operative word. Hey, before we finish up here, I wanted to bring you up to date, Alan. As you know, my home PC, my game machine, my beloved cyber power... had been running nonstop for like a couple of weeks. I shut it down for the weekend when I left, and when I came back, it would not start back up.
Now, yay.
Yeah.
The worst feeling.
Yeah. So we determined that it wasn't the power supply, so it had to be something on the motherboard or maybe the processing unit. Now, if you've taken a look under the hood of a computer, really, you're not going to take something out and take it down to the drugstore and test it like that back in the days of vacuum tubes. So rather than troubleshoot the board, which was certainly well beyond my capabilities, or pay somebody to troubleshoot the board, I decided it was time to upgrade. And actually, the upgrade process wasn't too bad. I found a company that actually took the new processor that I'd selected, and I went with an i7-8700 for those who are into the geek speak, an MSI motherboard, married them together with a what's called heat pipe cooling. So instead of liquid cooling, which I've always had some questions about the the veracity of, put the whole thing together. Long story short, I managed to put the thing together myself, and it's working. So yay me.
All right. I'm always a fan of just regular, good old fashioned heatsink fans.
Well, the heat pipe is kind of nice. It gets, because that processor generates a lot of heat. Hey, all the time we've got this time around. Thank you very much for your contribution to Boomer Tech Radio, Alan, and we'll talk to you next week. And listeners, we'll be back right after the top of the hour news from SRN right here on Boomer Tech Radio.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort. At 5756 F Westside Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour. From townhall.com, I'm Val Dior. Well, it's official. Prince Harry is married to American actress Meghan Markle. When the vows were said and done, this from Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby.
In the presence of God and before this congregation, Harry and Meghan have given their consent and made their marriage vows to each other. They have declared their marriage by the joining of hands and by the giving and receiving of rings. I therefore proclaim that they are husband and wife.
And to kick off the festivities, Queen Elizabeth honored her 33-year-old grandson with a new title, the Duke of Sussex, making Markle the Duchess of Sussex. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is acting to bar government-funded family planning clinics from referring women for abortions. Mercedes Schlapp is a White House advisor.
We have to prohibit the funding of abortion as a method of family planning. We do not need taxpayer dollars paying for abortion.
Schlapp tells the Salem Radio Network that President Trump is keeping his pro-life promises to deny Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers taxpayer money. Houston Texans defensive end J.J. Watt will pay the funeral expenses of the 10 people who lost their lives in a school shooting in Santa Fe, Texas, which is just south of Houston near Galveston. Watt's offer comes less than a year after he organized a fundraiser that raised $37 million for those affected by Hurricane Harvey. And by the way, Santa Fe is still recovering from 55 inches of rain from that storm. Meanwhile, the 17-year-old suspect in that shooting being held without bail, charged with capital murder in the deaths of one teacher and nine students. Two others are hospitalized, still fighting for their lives. Matt Kenseth has the poll for tonight's $1 million NASCAR All-Star Race at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Town Hall News.
Want to change how you feel significantly? ReliefFactor.com will do that for you. Support for temporary relief of minor aches and pains. If you're out there exercising, you go a little bit too far, as I did on Saturday, you definitely need Relief Factor on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Actually, I take it every day, as do tens of thousands of people. They know that they should have Omega, which is fish oil, Resveratrol, which you can get from drinking red wine, but you don't know how much. Icare and Curcumin all together, carefully calibrated, perfectly formulated, the combination of four natural supplements that everyone agrees you ought to be taking every single day. This makes it easy to do in the amount that is appropriate for your body. The starter pack is $19.95. You try it for 3 weeks. Put everything else away that your doctor says you can put away. Don't not take what he tells you to take. And then see if you don't feel terrific. You'll feel much better. ReliefFactor.com works. Tens of thousands of people say so. Their testimonials are abundant and real and sincere. Go and watch them and then get ReliefFactor.com.
The CEO of Tesla is doubling down on claims about the safety of the company's vehicles. Correspondent Linda Kenyon has more.
In a series of tweets this week, Tesla's CEO Elon Musk has been defending the safety of Tesla's vehicles, especially Tesla's autopilot semi-autonomous driving system. The stepped-up defense comes as federal investigators travel to Utah to open another inquiry into a Tesla crash, the fourth one this year. The crash involved a Model S that slammed into a fire truck that was stopped at a red light. The driver of that Model S that hit the fire truck at 60 miles per hour suffered a broken ankle.
Other crashes involving Tesla's semi-autonomous driving system have involved fatalities. U.S. officials telling the Associated Press that select allies and partners are already getting quiet briefings on the Trump administration's Middle East peace plan. The plan is to release the long-delayed proposal in mid to late June after the month of Ramadan. This is Town Hall News. PayPal is buying financial services startup iZettle for $2.2 billion to expand its digital payments service into thousands of brick-and-mortar stores in Europe and Latin America.
This deal is the largest acquisition in PayPal's 20-year history and intensifies its competition with Square, a payment processor started by Twitter co-founder and CEO Jack Dorsey. Both PayPal and Square are working to help mostly small and medium-sized retailers process sales that are not paid with cash.
Dennis Crowley reporting, and after the deal closes, PayPal will gain a presence in stores located in 11 new markets. President Trump's the Republican Party's most powerful political weapon, yet as the GOP fights to defend its delicate House and Senate majorities, he's not welcome everywhere. Some Republican candidates fear that the unscripted president could do more harm than good should he be campaigning on their behalf, but the White House says Trump will play an aggressive role in the coming months. Town Hall News.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Welcome back to Boomer Tech Radio. Bob and Brenda, the tech news that you can use. And earlier today, we started our morning bright and early with a live remote here on the radio station. And the day was when you had to drive a van full of gear, put up a big antenna, and then use a special part of the special transmitter to get back to your radio station, and then it would go out to the public. Nowadays, of course, I saw one station just using a smartphone. We actually use a Skype app so that we can have multiple microphones feeding in. And it's great as long as everything is set up correctly. At first, the guy at the station, Jared, our engineer, kept saying, "I can't hear anything. I can't hear anything." And I'm going, "Okay, what's going on here?" Well, during the setup, I had one of those portable battery packs that I was using to power my computer, the microphone mixer, and a few other things off of an inverter. An inverter takes 12-volt battery power and turns it into AC current like you get from the wall, but you can pick it up and walk around with it. It has a fairly limited life, but in this case it runs for about 3 hours on an average load, so I knew that we had plenty of capacity. But during I set it up, tested it, and then turned off the inverter. Well, what happened is my MacBook, when it could no longer see the mixer, reverted to the built-in microphone.
Ah.
So when we connected up on the air, yes, they were getting audio, but it was the audio being picked up by the computer's built-in microphone. That's why when you hear these Skype interviews and it sounds like the person is in a cave.
God.
That was the effect
that's
we were
like,
getting.
Please, really, people?
So after about 2 minutes of absolute freak out franticness, I realized what was going on, changed the Skype settings. Fortunately, I didn't have to restart Skype, and then everything worked.
What was the clue that led you to figure out that it was the computer's onboard speaker or microphone?
He kept saying that I can hear, but it's very hollow and distant. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I went to the, on Skype, you go to the audio settings.
Right.
And, built-in microphone, not the external
gotcha.
Mixer, which is a USB device.
So that feedback about what it sounded like was a clue.
Yeah, that set me in the right direction. So, and I'm not the smartest guy in the world on this stuff. Every once in a while, I'll be staring at a problem in the face and going, oh, that was it. I did, as you heard me talking about with Alan before the break, I managed to change out my own motherboard and power supply. And if you if you want to tinker around with your own computer and really get into its guts, it isn't that hard. There's plenty of
online tutorials and things like that.
Online tutorials. And rather than buy a whole new PC that's just a box and you don't know what's going on inside that box, it's kind of neat, especially if you do video editing or maybe you're a gamer or something like that. building your own is sort of like the days of hot rodding, when you would get the engine and the transmission and all that stuff put together and make it your own.
Well, the folks that built your computer, you decided to have somebody else build it because then they would test for compatibility of products and all of that kind of thing rather than trying to do that on your own. So it's would be like going to the junkyard and getting a new fender, but it's not the same color as the rest of the car.
Right, right.
It works, but, you know, maybe not so good or well. And it computer parts can be that way. There can be incompatibilities between brand names and that. So building your own, you kind of have to do that research, too.
Right.
But the, this change-up that you did in your computer because you had to, because the motherboard died, is you kind of tinkering it with it and souping it up and that sort of thing. And granted, the whole package cost about... what, $800
to do? About $800
to do. Which you say, well, you can buy a new computer for $800. Yeah, but you can't buy a new computer of this power and speed for $800.
Right. What I've got, for those of you who are into the geek speak, it's an Intel i7 processor, the 8700. I don't overclock because I don't feel the need to overclock. For those who say, well, why didn't you get an overclock model, which is running the, it basically it's a turbocharger on your computer's processor. It adds more heat. Puts more stress on it for a couple of percentage points of gain.
Right. You don't work the computer.
It's like nitrous
that
oxide in your computer.
Yeah, you
don't really need it.
Right. You don't,
it's
anyway.
Still, stock is about twice as fast as the processor I had before.
Right.
Well, this latest generation of processors, which are called Coffee Lake, well, they're not the latest and greatest. The i9 processors are the latest and greatest. Still, this is a 6-core. I had 4 cores. In other words, there's 6 individual processors on the same chip. And just like the way your brain hands off...
More brain power.
Yeah, it splits up tasks between the cores.
Multitasks, in a way.
Yeah, and through a process called hyper-threading, can actually fan out the workload among different parts of the computer. So overall, the whole process gets done faster. It also requires a different kind of RAM. Now, RAM is the, of course, working memory of the computer.
Right, random access memory.
Right. My old system had DDR3. I had to go to DDR4, which is considerably faster.
Right.
So that was an improvement. To make all this work, I needed a beefier power supply. And if you're building your own computer, that's one thing you have to look at, is making sure you have a big power supply.
In the days of stereos and whatnot, you used to have your amplifier and your speakers. Well, you still can, of course. But your speakers needed to be, like, rated for twice what your amp was.
Correct.
Because you didn't want to blow out your speakers. So this is the same kind of thing with the power supply, is that you need to have a power supply that's built to handle the demands, the power demands, right, the peak demands of your computer on a consistent basis. So if you overbuild that, that's not a bad thing because you're not killing off your power supply.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sometimes what happens, is that a power supply is barely adequate to the job. And, yeah, it'll work for a while, but after, then you physically wear it out,
mm-hmm.
and it fails. And so then your computer won't start. And so there's a number of things, the reason your computer might not start. But power supply is always one of the first things you can suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then because you put more brain power in and it's working harder, you had to modify the cooling system as well, and one that's more efficient.
Well, the computer that I originally bought, and I reused the case and I reused the drives, and all, with one glaring exception.
The video cards,
same. Yeah, I reused the video
card.
So
a lot of components are the same.
Which I purchased a year ago. And I bucked the trend. Most people get NVIDIA video cards if they want to do gaming. I got an AMD RX9, and I really like or RX 480 card, which I really like.
Well, you also did your research on that.
Right, and it's not as popular with the Bitcoin miners.
Well, there's that, right? Might be a little more available.
Yeah.
But performance-wise versus cost,
it was bang for the buck. The Radeon card, or the
AMD.
AMD card gave me a lot more bang for the buck. But I reused my old case, which was nice because it's got very good cooling options. So anybody can, with a little research, if you're even remotely handy with a screwdriver, you can do this stuff.
Most of these are plug-and-play components. I mean, I would be a little intimidated to try this. This is pure play for you.
Yeah.
But because you're not bothered by these things, you know, you figure these things out. Me, if it doesn't work the first time, I get frustrated because I think it should, or I thought I did things right. That's why I hire you to solve these problems, because I don't have any patience with it. And but it isn't hard. I've replaced memory, and that's easy peasy. So you just have to make sure you get the right stuff. That's the hardest thing, I think, is the compatibility issues.
Right. And what I did, now the company I bought from was called Portatech, and they took the CPU and the motherboard, put them together, and mounted this cooling fan, which is actually what's called a heat pipe, which the whole idea is that the CPU is generating an awful lot of heat because of all the transistors on it. So you want to draw heat away from the CPU.
Yeah, you're looking for a heat sink.
So if your computer's acting funky, that's one thing you want to check, is make sure you're not overheating and make sure you're not overdrawing your power supply.
And then finally, there's the coolest of cool with your new boards.
This particular board is a gaming board, and it had an option for LED lighting. And I happen to have sitting in a box some strips of LED lights. Well, gee, okay. So I looked in the manual, and they were compatible with what I had, so I plugged them in, and now my case glows.
Hell of a nightlight, let me tell you.
It doesn't take up a lot. LED strip lights don't take a whole lot of power.
Just what everybody needs is the inside of their computer case lit up. Oh, and you think you can change colors, too.
Yes.
My God.
I can do a little light show.
That's a super geek right there.
Now here's the frustrating part. If you're a Mac user, you know that you can take your hard drive out of one Mac and stick it in another Mac and continue going. You can't do that with Microsoft Windows.
Yeah.
Damn
you, Bill Gates.
The parameters on Windows 10 are so that people can't just copy the software. It is basically keyed to the hardware identifier of your computer. Now, there is a workaround. If you're going to upgrade your computer, make sure you register your software with a Microsoft account. Then you can move it once from one computer to another. But because this was a hardware fail that took me down, I didn't have that option. Now, I'm recopying. Most of my software comes off the Internet. Actually, the Windows 10 installation process, I opted to do it from a USB drive. So I sent, ordered it off of Amazon because I didn't have any copies here locally. I got a little thing with what's called the product key, which is a long string of numbers and letters, and a little tiny USB thumb drive. And you configure your computer to boot up into the thumb drive, and that does the installation, which takes about 45 minutes. But when it was all done, I was starting from square one. And I know people who routinely do this to their PC. They will completely reinstall the operating system to clear out all the
cobwebs.
Yeah, they clear out the cobwebs.
So this little dongle that you got, now you could use it again if you need to. It's not a one-time use?
Right. If, let's say that I had a hard drive fail, well, that I could simply replace the hard drive and reinstall the operating system. But because I had a different motherboard and different processor, I couldn't reuse my old Windows 10.
Right.
But I'm going to go ahead, you can bet your dollars, I'm going to go ahead and register my Windows 10. In the event that I have a hardware fail, I can just reload it into another computer.
That was a little over $100, as I recall.
Right. Same thing with my Adobe software. I use Adobe Premiere Pro. I know I should be using Final Cut, right? I'm not a professional if I don't use Final Cut. True story. Somebody told me that to my face. The bottom line is, if you're doing video editing, do what works for you, right? Anyway, my Premiere Pro, I was able to just reload off of the Adobe site. You're not so much buying software off the shelf as you're getting a subscription to it.
Right,
which is a two-edged sword. For one thing, it's an ongoing expense, but you always got the latest and greatest.
Right. You don't have to learn new software. Usually the changes are minor from run to run, too, whether they update it on you. It's not like this big wholesale thing where you're working with version 7, and now there's version 11, and there could be big differences between the two.
Yeah. And most old projects, if you reload them, the software will look at the old project and configure it for the new software.
That's a nice feature.
Yeah. I got really annoyed with Adobe a couple of years ago when I wanted to cancel my subscription, and there was this very narrow window, and you could only cancel during a certain, you know, in at the end of the run. You couldn't cancel mid-year. And the way they set it up, it's like one of those darn magazine subscriptions where it automatically renews unless you turn off the automatic renewal.
Right.
Remember how – that's the way AOL used to be, by the way.
Yeah.
And that's the way a lot of these companies are, is they set you up on
–
yeah, they set you up on automatic renewal. And then, God help you if you've forgotten your password.
Yeah.
To try to turn the renewal off. You have to end, you end up having to go to your bank and say, stop paying these people. Anyway.
You got to love technology.
Got to love technology. So here's something. I saw this story and I said, oh, this is so Brenda's thing. Brenda has opinions about traffic lights.
I think most people have opinions about traffic lights.
Automated traffic. Well, of course, all traffic lights are now automated. They have somebody sitting there pulling a switch. But it used to be there was like a big clockwork with relays in the box.
Yeah.
And it would turn like your lamp timer used to be. And the relays would open and close and switch the lights. Pretty darn reliable. It didn't fail very often. Now, of course, we have all kinds of software, and because they can change the traffic lights at different times. You have a little imaging camera that figures out if there's a car there or not. What happens when that doesn't work correctly? Or you're on a motorcycle. Anybody who's ever ridden a motorcycle's had this one. The traffic light doesn't see you there.
Right. Your footprint isn't, or it doesn't pick up the wire sensor in the pavement. Because you're too little.
Right.
Or in the wrong place.
So programming traffic lights is a tricky business.
Oh, absolutely. What drives me crazy is if it's, you know, early in the morning, late at night or whatever, and the traffic signal lights are built for normal daytime traffic, which, of course, is much heavier, and you're sitting there with no vehicles in sight, la-da-da-da-da, at a red light. Really?
Right.
Really? Dude, that just makes no sense to me. And I've, you know, been known to go a little rogue and cross the intersection anyway. It's perfectly safe. There's nobody there. And it's the other thing is when you have a little bit of traffic going one way and a lot of traffic going on the cross street, you know, the traffic flow is at opposition, you still have to wait a long time for no cars to come through. That seems to me to be kind of a waste. Not only is it a waste of my time, but it's also a waste that if those cars sitting there are idling, you know, if you want to look at it from a pollution point of view, they could be on their way and not be sitting there doing nothing.
Right. Now, here's the scenario. Now, IBM has filed for a patent for an artificial intelligence-powered traffic management system. And for the reason that, as we have found ourselves, you're sitting at a four-way stop for 3 minutes because there isn't anybody else in sight.
Yeah, well, or and it's not your time to go because the timer says, you know, I run green light this way for so many minutes, and then I run red light this way so many minutes, and let the other cross street go. So it would seem to me that it would not be that difficult to have systems that could figure out these scenarios. We have a local light here in town that just slays me. You cannot turn right on it. The sign comes on. It says you can't turn right on this signal. But there's nobody in the crosswalk. It's just out of sync. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds on to this don't turn right signal forever and a day that just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be for pedestrians going there. I get that part, but they're not synced up. The pedestrian light and this don't turn right for the cars don't match.
Now, those people would say, well, why don't we go back to having traffic cops? Because traffic cops cost a lot of money.
They do cost a lot of money, and that would be an inherently dangerous business.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to stand out in the middle of an intersection with cars whizzing around me. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Because somebody is going to misjudge and they'll hit you.
Yep.
Not a good idea.
So here's a few scenarios that an AI system would have to be programmed for and figure out responses for. A group of kids standing in the rain waiting to cross the road.
Well, if they had raincoats on, what difference does it make? If you're a pedestrian, you kind of got to dress for the weather anyway. I don't know as kids standing there or anybody standing there in the pouring rain is any big deal, but that's just my opinion about that one.
Very slow-moving pedestrians, perhaps an elderly person partway across the road.
Yeah, that's definitely one. The pedestrian lights aren't always for folks that move slower, yes.
So you're developing protocols for complex environments. The author of this article says IBM should fast-track, and this is from Next Web, by the way, IBM should push the patent plan because traffic is just awful. Now, there are certain planners who say, well, we all need to move over to mass transit. That's not practical for everybody in all areas, you know.
Well, and then another thing that could be done, and people would take advantage of this, is if a light is about to turn green and there's a car in the intersection, that light does not turn green to let the cross traffic go until the intersection is actually clear. Well, people would take advantage of that. They can already kind of do. There's definitely a responsibility on the part of the driver here, though. One of the suggestions is that if someone has tripped and fallen in the crosswalk halfway across the road, you know, don't turn the light green. Well, I would hope that people driving a vehicle would slow down or stop for that situation no matter what the light says. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. The light said I could go. I'm just going to go anyway, please. They have to have a little common sense with some of this stuff. But it does make sense with things like there's a big queue of traffic in one direction and not so much one in the other way, then make it, you know, more frequent. That people go, and there are, you know, those motion sensors that they have on lights that work for that in some places already. So I think the difference here, though, is having some sensible processing of what's actually going on and controlling traffic that way. Most traffic lights are set up so that you can go a certain speed and hit all of them in a row, you know, green or what have you, and it's the stop-and-go stuff that's a problem. And I think what they're proposing is that this AI would be able to judge traffic flow sufficiently to keep it moving more efficiently. So to me, the next extension is having sensors in the street or whatever and knowing where the traffic flow is and having a holistic system that figures out how to get that traffic moving smoother. And I'm sure that there have been tons of studies done on this kind of thing, but AIs are very good at recognizing patterns, particularly time of day and that sort of thing, and learning what is most efficient for such things. So, yeah, it would be nice. In the meantime, I'll, 3 o'clock in the morning and nobody around, go for it. Do be careful out there, though. I've noticed the newest trend in driving is you don't even bother to stop for the red light on a right turn when you come to an intersection. You just... oh, there's nobody there, nobody coming. I'm not going to stop.
Yeah.
It's beyond a rolling stop. Yeah, it's no stop.
Yeah, just ignore it.
Just keep on going like it wasn't there.
Sharing vehicles, and we've talked about this before, instead of running big mass transit buses in a fixed loop, why don't we have small electric vehicles on demand? You use your app or you push a button on a kiosk and the nearest available transporter comes to you, usually a 2 or 4 passenger pod that is electrically powered, strictly for use in the city area, zips you to your destination, lets you out, and then it goes to a charging station or some similar spot and waits for the next call. If you have more people moving around, you deploy more vehicles. If it's late at night, you pull them back into the barn. Similarly, electric scooter and bike sharing services are all over the West Coast, Los Angeles, Santa Monica, San Francisco. There are some problems, people vandalizing or stealing them. Now, of course, most of these devices have a brain of sorts, and if they are taken out of their service area, they just shut down. Or they have specialized charging material, charging systems. Now, a company in Washington, D.C. that's going online called Skip is actually doing electric scooters, which have about a 30-mile range, top speed of about 18 miles an hour. Now, if you're not a particularly well-balanced person, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, these scooters are not sit-on scooters. These are stand-on scooters, like the little Razor kid toys and things like that. So it's sort of essentially a powered, fat-tired, two-tired skateboard with handlebars.
This is a dockless sharing service. In other words, you find the scooter, finding an app close to you. You scan a code to unlock it. It's $1 a ride and 15 cents a minute within your and then when you get to your destination, you just park it, and it waits for the next person to come along. It won't actually do something until you activate it with the code from a smartphone.
So what's different about the Skip deal, though, that it's brought in an electric scooter that's of a little bit better quality than some of these others on the West Coast that have developed, apparently. And these are this is brought about by the same company that, or the same folks that built up the company called the Boosted Board. And I don't know what Boosted Board is, but I'm going to assume that it's like electric skateboard. And I've seen some of those around here, actually. You kind of have to, it doesn't say whether you can ride these in the street or they stay on the sidewalk or what the deal is with these. But if you're going to go somewhere and try this, one thing I would strongly recommend is make sure you wear a helmet.
Exactly. Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda. More of the tech news you can use after this.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we keep our produce pure by bathing our fruits and vegetables with water from our multi-stage purification system, leaving it fresh, clean, and crisp. Fresh from the farm to your family's table. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new lines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
It is tough establishing a new business in California, and even tougher if you're trying to understand the multiple laws that seem to have no other reason but to make your life harder. How do you deal with those legal hurdles while trying to build this new business or expand an existing one? By having your own qualified expert assist you. Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in business law and is well versed on the morass of legal questions facing a California business. Douglas Wright, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or douglaswrightlaw.com.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we strive to be the gatekeepers of 100% organically grown produce. Our goal is to provide you and your family with produce that is fresh from the farm and pure, 100% organically grown. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
That catchy theme music you're listening to here on Boomer Tech Radio is called 8-Bit Junkie, composed and performed by a fellow named George Wood in a merry old England, where, of course, the royal wedding is taking place. We're not watching it. But he gave us permission to use it as a theme song for this program 10 years ago. Pretty cool. Also, a big shout-out to our good friends at Advanced Automotive of Reading. Safe, reliable car care for their customers and our community, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Look them up on RepairPal.com or AdvancedAutoReading.com. Now, we've heard about autonomous flying vehicles. And
autonomous cars.
Yeah, autonomous cars. Now, when it comes to the military, of course, drones, which aren't necessarily autonomous. You've got, most of the time, somebody sitting in a control room on a big video stick, video game setup, flying the drone. But, of course, there are an increasing number of drones that don't have a real-time pilot on board. They're out there doing their own thing. Now, so far, most of them are not delivering munitions. They're not making life and death decisions, but that day is not far off. But there's other things, of course, that unmanned aerial vehicles can do. And the United States Marine Corps is experimenting with a – it's a fairly conventional-looking helicopter, except it's got some extra stuff hanging on the front of it. This is from a company called Aurora Flight Sciences. They recently unveiled an autonomous LIDAR-equipped helicopter called the ACUS. Now, LIDAR is, of course, like radar, only instead of using radio waves, you're using laser beams
right.
to bounce off objects and determine
right.
your position.
Which gives you very precise measurements, first of all, and it can cut through a lot of things.
Now, anybody who flies will tell you that operating a helicopter is an extremely mentally intensive process.
Complex machines. Aurora, by the way, is owned by Boeing, and this ACUS thing stands for Autonomous Aerial Cargo Utility System. It's based on the Bell UH-1H helicopter, otherwise known
Huey.
As a Huey. Yes, based on the Huey airframe, and they have a picture of one here in our story on Boomer Tech Radio on Flipboard.
Aurora has equipped other models with the autonomous systems, including Bell 206 and the Boeing AH-6. So presumably, once you've got the techniques down and the software down, you can adapt it to other platforms. The whole idea is here, if you need to send in supplies or get people out, let's say medevac, These helicopters are frequently targets. Now, of course, on the return trip, you've got the potential for loss of human life. But for a lot of applications, can you say firefighting, where it's an extremely dangerous thing, an air crash of any sort is a bad thing. But if you have loss of life, that's a very bad thing. So
right.
I'm foreseeing these kinds of systems being used to perform spot checks on fires, deliver water and retardant precisely to the area. Plus, they don't care if it's day or night.
To some extent, that would be true. One thing it doesn't say in here about their successful test is how complicated the flight area was that it had to go through.
Well, it does say something about pretty rough terrain.
Right. It can autonomously pick its own landing zone, or LZ, in a fairly complex terrain, which is pretty amazing because it has to have a lot of information. Are those rotors going to hit the power lines and that sort of thing? And then the other thing that I would question is what kind of weather can this thing handle in terms of how does it know? It must have some extra sensors about pitch, yaw, and roll. It is and what
your smartphone has that now.
Yeah, which position the aircraft is actually in order to compensate and keep it on a level playing field. And who knows? You know, maybe these things will become better at auto-rotating landings when there's a problem and things like that and be safer. But then again, sometimes you can't pick the LZ, and it can be kind of a nasty location. So, but these could still be targets where... in the case of medevac, you know, then you have a problem where the person that's medevacing and the aircraft is lost, or the supplies could be lost that are in the vehicle. And that doesn't to say that if it was human operated, the same problem wouldn't occur, of course.
Now, a lot of people say all these concerns about unmanned aerial vehicles or drones, as they are frequently called, they're not necessarily drones. Well, we should just ban them because some people will misuse them. But there are so many things. For instance,
cars get misused.
We have an acquaintance with an organization we're with who's very enthusiastic about the potential for unmanned aerial vehicles to be used in search and rescue missions.
Absolutely.
Well, you can just dispatch a helicopter. Look at the cost per hour. And in terms of the people at the controls and then the maintenance of the vehicle itself.
Well, yeah, and the maintenance, if you have a small drone that's doing recon or something like that, the maintenance on that is much cheaper than a full-sized aircraft with people in it, for sure. Not only that, the risk to human life is much less. The problem with these little drones is power and the duration that they can stay afloat. But there are larger drones that can stay aloft for days.
Yeah.
So... this kind of use for these things is definitely coming. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
It's already being done.
Yep. Look for it to be more increased. And I'm not saying that we're getting used to these things. A few years ago, there was an event, and a drone flew over to take some footage, and people were freaking out. It was a privately owned drone making an authorized flight. But now the FAA has cleared the way for commercial operations. See, it wasn't until just a few months ago that you could legally use a drone in a commercial operation in the U.S.
Right.
If you weren't just conducting research or
right.
something.
Right, right.
So, we shall see. Remember when the Google Glass came out and everybody mocked it? And we first saw it at a CES event, a Consumer Electronics Show, and you couldn't touch them. They were just kind of waving them around. They were non-functional at the time.
Yeah.
Then they were sold on a very limited basis. You had to be on a special list to get one.
The social reaction was
extremely
very negative.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it had to do with something of the Borg look, because... not long after that, people were getting Snapchat glasses, and nobody really got too freaked out about that. Well, that the whole idea is a head-mounted display, and that's not for everybody. But for somebody who is taking warehouse inventory, who is surveying an area, the idea of being able to have a heads-up, real-time display is pretty good. And now if you add the whole idea of augmented reality, military is very into this, so is the gaming community, where you have
the scene of virtual reality encloses you in a completely artificial, visual, and
right.
audible environment.
Right.
Augmented reality overlays what you can see and hear around you with digitally generated content.
Right. So, for example, if you were walking down the street with augmented reality, there could be an app that says, okay, Tony's Bar is over here, and the Mexican restaurant is over there, and the Thai Bistro is over here. As you're walking down the street, it gives you information about additional information what's going on in your world. And, yeah, maybe you can see the sign for Tony's Bar or whatever, but maybe you don't know that it's a microbrewery and that it has food and it's open till 11. Today they have a special on, and it's open until 11 o'clock tonight. And that would be all supplemental information that, that VR could provide as you're looking at the business. It enhances things. It may tell you that the crosswalk that you're coming up to is about to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be as sophisticated as that. And so if you're really crazy, you can run and try to make it. Or, you know, you at least know you're going to have to slow down or whatever. And that's just one example of augmented reality. There's other possibilities, and they've already done this online with things. If you want to redecorate your house, and let's say you want to put this wall color and that flooring with, you know,
right.
this furniture, you can do all of that on the computer and get a feel for what it looks like
long
before you even do it.
Hold your phone up.
Yeah, hold your phone up. Same difference.
Yeah.
What I mean is that you can do this electronically and see what it looks like before you actually ever put it all together and then go, oh, that's not a very good idea.
Yeah. Or on your tablet, you simply hold it in front of you so that it takes an image of the room, and then it will IKEA is getting really into this, where they you can
right.
try, well, let's try this couch,
right.
let's try that couch.
Exactly.
Instead of getting the thing hauled home and then you go, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work with that wall.
Right. So that's a VR that you're not necessarily putting right before, augmented reality, that you're putting before your eyes in terms of glasses or what have you, but you're still using augmented reality on a screen.
Excuse me. Google AR is working on a headset, codenamed the Google A65. It's something along the lines of the Microsoft HoloLens. Now, granted, the HoloLens is $5,000 a copy. Google being Google, they've probably looked at what the Microsoft does, and they're bringing it in at a somewhat lower price point. Now, this, of course, is a long way from market. Not a lot have known about it as yet. Most likely it'll have a Qualcomm brand processor. And a Chinese manufacturer named Quanta, a Taiwanese manufacturer, Quanta, working on some of the hardware. Mixed reality hardware is going to show up. It's not going to be something for everybody, but especially for people who have a visual impairment or hearing impairment.
Yeah, very well.
Visual, mixed reality would be very good for somebody who is deaf, where if it has like speech recognition and it can give them real-time translations.
Yep, sure.
Or it can warn them that there's a car horn going off.
Yep.
There's already headset systems for blind people that say there is a curb 3 feet in front of you. Now, a lot of these have a human agent involved, the ones for blind people, but that is rapidly being replaced by an AI-type system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting stuff. I think that kind of stuff is fascinating. It's true. It is a bit Borgish. It is. Indeed, it is.
We thought Bluetooth headsets were something.
Yeah, right. People talking to themselves. Oh, it's so true.
Apple. Now, this, of course, is not... For most companies, this would be crippling. But, of course, for Apple, it's part of the cost of doing business. Apple has transferred the first €1.5 billion, that's about $1.2 billion to you and me, and they've made the first installment on a €16 billion fine ordered by the European Union, and that's to reflect back taxes the company supposedly didn't pay. The European Commission has ordered that Apple pay the sum. This
was a sweetheart deal. Apple allegedly received favorable tax rates in places like Ireland, and the European Union called foul. Now, a lot of this has to do with picking on Apple because it's a big American company and pushing them aside in favor of locally grown companies. But then again, Apple is a little bit of a bully in the marketplace, as is Google.
Well, you know, they the 1,200-pound gorillas in the room. It's a business model, you know. They're in it to make money or do whatever, be king of the heap, whatever the deal is, you know. And they may or may not survive. You know, they might be around for a generation, and then something else will come up, right?
Yeah. Oh, by the way.
I think this is so funny.
Yeah. We reported a few months ago on the mystery satellites.
Oh. I thought you were going to talk about something else.
Oh, no. We're going to probably round up with that one. The space bees. And they got a great graphic
it's
on this story out of the Atlantic.
It's basically a bee with a space suit helmet on.
Yeah.
I mean, they've photoshopped this.
This is four satellites that were launched, supposedly the first ones that were launched into space without permission. Space is pretty regulated because we want to know what's flying around
right
up there, because there's so many things flying around up
right
there that they have a tendency to fly into each other if they're not on perfectly determined courses.
And you don't want parts and pieces falling to the Earth at random times of random sizes.
And you don't want things in orbit smacking into each other at 25,000 miles an hour. Bad things happen. Anyway, a California-based company... let's see, what is the name of the company? What is it? It was right here. Swarm Technologies. Why not? Swarm Technologies is a startup that was founded in 2016. They're out of Los Altos. Now, they're very private. And this is because they don't want a major company to pick up on their idea with bigger resources and beat them to it. Their idea was to deploy a low-cost internet access system using swarms of extremely small satellites in a close Earth orbit. Well, this is what Musk is trying to do with his new Iridium system, which is an update of the old Iridium system. Anyway, the FCC, in 2016, they applied for a grant from the National Science Foundation. They got $220,000. Then they submitted an application to the FCC to send up these four tiny satellites, which are only 10 centimeters by 2.8 centimeters. So they're pretty darn small. And the concern was that these satellites are so small that you wouldn't be able to track them on radar. And they would be hazardous projectiles in orbit.
Right, because they do track a lot of space junk.
Well, NORAD tracks all these objects.
Yep. Well, yeah, asteroids and things like that, too, yeah.
Well, the FCC in December denied Swarm's request to launch and operate the satellites, worried about the safety concerns, and said that this was a big hazard. Swarm submitted another application in January 7th, and a few days later, a rocket launched out of India carried these satellites up into orbit without U.S. authorization. This is a U.S. company launching these satellites on a foreign carrier without authorization. It's unclear. Just now we've stepped into some weird territory.
Well,
legally.
Yeah, the law may not even be able to address this because, you know, who'd have thunk type of thing.
The FCC has begun an investigation into this apparent unauthorized launch. Now, the U.S. Strategic Command says they know where the satellites are because they have really good optical devices. They're too small to track with radar, but not too small to be seen. You know, if you can sit up in orbit and read a license plate.
Should be able to find something that's roughly five by 1 inch.
Yeah, because they do reflect sunlight.
1.25 inches
yeah.
Long or, you know, dimensions.
Plus, these things are putting out some signals, and
Although nothing concrete yet, according to one person that's been tracking them.
Yeah. Well, the FCC has completed a fact-finding inquiry. It's unclear just who is going to be fined for this, because you're supposed to get permits before you do this stuff. So,
but they may not even know who to fine, even though the company made these satellites. Maybe they sold them right away because they couldn't send them into space. Somebody bought them and did something with them.
Now, there are, the satellites do not have a propulsion system. Eventually, gravity will assert itself.
Exactly.
Even at these high altitudes, there's enough air molecules to gradually slow the satellite down until it falls.
Force of gravity will slow it down. There's a bit of friction that slows it. The pull of Earth is going to prevail with time, and the orbit will decay to the point of where the object falls back
burn,
to the
and
Earth.
They're pretty small. They will simply burn up.
Yeah, they simply should fry on reentry.
Low Earth orbit, pretty crowded place. There's about 1,200 satellites that work, 4,300 that don't, and 23,000 plus pieces of debris.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
According to European Space Agency,
stuff is up there, mm-hmm. And it's quite the junkyard. It's too bad they don't have a space vehicle that can go up and, you know, recycle, pick up the crumbs and clear that up a little bit, just so you can fill it up with more, I'm sure. But
there's legalities involved here because
absolutely.
Back in 2009, a couple of satellites crashed into each other and were mutually destroyed. There's concerns about killsats that are sent up to destroy other satellites, such as those which are watching for nuclear launches.
Or communications
and things
like that.
Anything
to do with national security.
Under international law, if one of these things rams a Russian satellite and smashes it up, both the U.S. and India could be legally on the hook for the loss of the Russian satellite or whoever these things inadvertently smacked into. So there's a lot of treaties. These are what are called nanosatellites.
Right.
Between 1 and 10 kilograms. Many more are coming. Of course, SpaceX wants to launch hundreds of these things into orbit. And the whole thing is network constellations.
Sure.
To provide internet over broad areas.
Yep, and fairly fast internet at that.
Yeah.
So you don't have to build a land-based infrastructure. And the thing about them being in space, of course, is that they would be available to anyone, including those in more remote areas that don't have cell access or any other internet access.
Mm-hmm. Finally, a baby name loses popularity.
This is the one that's killing me.
The name, which we don't often utter on this show because we don't want to trigger the one that's sitting in everybody's house.
And we do apologize for doing so.
If we trigger off your smart speaker, we do apologize in advance. The baby, the name Alexa, as a baby name, has dropped in popularity since the launch of Amazon's smart speaker.
This is good.
You get, it's right here on a graph, and we got this from Mashable.
Dropped precipitously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would have thought maybe it was going to go the other way, but very sharp drop.
Oh, yeah, it's continuing to decline. Let's see here. Alexa is, it's 20% less popular. Name Siri isn't particularly popular. It did peak a couple of years ago after the launch of the assistant. In the first year of Apple's assistant, 120 girls were reportedly named Siri. Last year, only 20. But the name Alexa had been around for a while, since the 1940s, as a popular name. But it took a big drop since the introduction of Amazon's speaker.
The really side interesting effects of technology. Yes. And finally, I want to briefly mention that if you're at all familiar with Burning Man Festival out on the Black Rock Desert in Nevada every Labor Day weekend, well, it's more than Labor Day weekend, but it's about a week-long thing. This year's theme is iRobot.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with that, Google it. You'll learn all kinds of things.
Not the movie with Will Smith.
Right.
All the time for this week.
Boomer, or the book.
Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other. Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.